This is the Lattice Training Podcast, where we bring you the best in climbing performance and training from the world's elite athletes, thought leaders, and coaches.
Adam Ondra has just repeated what is likely the world's hardest trad route, Bon Voyage E12, that was established by James Pearson last year. This is a route that James gave the current highest trad grade in existence, the mighty E12, which ultimately represents a route with both a high level of objective danger and also a physical difficulty of at least 9A. Now, suggesting grades at the cutting edge is nothing new, really, and it's something that's happened thousands of times before and across all of the climbing disciplines. But what I feel is really unique about this particular route is the efforts that James went to try and get some kind of objective consensus on the grade, culminating in the visit of Adam Ondra and its first repeat recently. I wanted to sit down in this interview with James to, one, share his experiences of climbing with Adam Ondra, and two, whether his own thoughts about grading were shared by Adam as well. After all, this is a man who's climbed many of the world's hardest routes and is never scared of sharing a personal grade or three. So, James, welcome back to the podcast again. Me and you.
Hey, Tom, thank you so much for having me back. It's an honor. What can I say? Anytime I get to digitally connect with you is a good moment. So we actually very, very rarely get to do this in person. So
I know.
As good as I can get at the minute.
And we're going to talk about grades. I mean,
my favorite subject. Everyone's favorite subject, realistically.
Yeah.
Even for the purists out there that say they don't matter. I know they've got a little tick list at home.
I mean, everyone's got a tick list at home, haven't they? And I think all of us, no matter which way you look at it, do place some value on grades, whether it's comedy or it actually really, really matters.
Yeah, I think so. Apart from maybe Nicky Cherrier. I don't know if you've been following his Instagram. Basically, he never talks about grades and he just does the most beautiful, amazing-looking boulder problems in the world and lets that speak for itself. And I really respect that. But for those of us that can't do the most beautiful boulder problems in the world, then, you know, grades will have to do.
Yeah. So can you... I mean, I know there's been loads of media out about your first ascent of Bon Voyage, and you're really good about like basically explaining the whole journey on your Instagram. There's a really in-depth article that came out on UK climbing. You've had a few people who've come and sort of tried the moves out and shared that route with you after you've made the ascent. So I think most people in the climbing community are fairly aware of the story behind Bon Voyage, mainly because you've been really good about sharing your journey with that route, projecting it, and then after doing it, talking a lot about your decisions on the grade on it, getting other people to come along and try the route afterwards. And then there was a really good long article on UKC where you kind of just explained that whole journey over your whole career, all the trad climbing that you've done around the world. But I think the place that I wanted to start with today was, where did it start with getting Adam involved with this route? Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because when I think a lot of people, when they heard the news that Adam had repeated Bon Voyage, they were fairly surprised. It kind of almost like it came out of the blue that, you know, the world's best sport climber came to do a trad route. But actually, it'd been a work in progress between the two of us for quite some time, pretty much since I made the first ascent. Like you rightly said, I was quite actively involved really early on in trying to get other people to come and try the route and to spend some time on it with me and just to kind of help me down this confusing road of proposing a grade for the thing. And I had a long list of people I really wanted to come and see the route and spend some time on it. And at the top of that list was Adam. And that might seem a little odd because he's not very well known for his trad routes. Although, you know, a lot of people might remember something called the Dawn Wall that he did a few years ago, which is fairly fairly impressive. But the truth is that not only is Adam probably the most, no, probably about it, 100% sure, the most experienced person around the 9A, 8C plus, 9A, 9A plus range. You know, he's climbed more routes than anybody in all sorts of different styles on all sorts of different rock types. So would be one of the best people to give as close to an objective as opinion as you could probably get. He's also a super bold climber, and he doesn't consider himself to be a trad climber, but he grew up in the Czech Republic, which is, you know, one of the boldest climbing countries in the world. And apart from doing all those sketchy stuff when he was a kid, he's been to Indian Creek. He's climbed some of the hardest crack routes over there. Obviously, he's climbed the Dawn Wall, like we've already mentioned. He's definitely not a trad novice. And because Bon Voyage is a relatively simple trad route, as in the protection itself is fairly simple to place. There's not really any specific trad related techniques to it. He just struck me immediately as the dream person to get to come and try it and to give me an answer to my burning question.
And how did the initial chat go? Did you just send him a text and say, "Hey Adam, do you want to come and try it?" Or were you like at an event and you kind of just end up talking to him after the event about the route? Like, were you at the crag? Like, how did it?
I actually got his number off you. I don't know if you remember.
I don't know.
No, I mean, I already knew Adam from various events in the past, but I didn't actually have his number. And it had been probably quite a few years since we'd actually met in person. I think actually one of the we talked about this during Bon Voyage. Maybe the last time we actually climbed together outside was in 2012 or something, sport climbing in Spain, when he was working on La Jora Jora. And it's so funny because he remembers, like, I'm basically a nobody compared to him, and he remembers everything. But that's just Adam. He's got an incredible memory, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's such an amazingly gifted on-site climber and flash climber. Anyway, we're getting off topic. So yeah, so just after Bon Voyage, I asked you for his number, and I sent him a message. I didn't really expect to hear anything from him. I sent a message to quite a few people, and immediately he was super psyched. And he called me back. We had a long chat about the route, about why, you know, I was finding it really difficult to grade, and we started to make some plans. And originally he was supposed to come last year, and then there were some issues during the trip that he was on, and it didn't happen. It kind of all fell through, and I just had this feeling that okay, that was maybe it. You know, I was lucky one time. He was almost there, and then he's going to go do some other stuff. And then again, he actually chased me up this year, didn't know when I was free to come back to try Bon Voyage. And it really happened. He really came. He really did it. And I got to witness one of the probably most impressive eye-opening climbing days of my life, but probably not necessarily for the reasons that everybody would think. Maybe we can get into that in a minute. But yeah, amazing experience.
No, that's so cool. And I think what you said there about Adam being more interested in diverse climbing experience than you might think, and he's just up for a lot more than you, in a way, give him credit for, totally rings true for me. Because I remember me and Pete talking to him about coming to the UK and coming to the cellar, and we were like, he'll never do that. He'll never, ever do it. And actually, he was so much more interested in doing it because it was a different and a unique experience and something that he liked, that there was a bit of history behind it. He knew that it was going to be something really hard and challenging. He's going to learn something from it. And I think that's what is a really standout feature about him as a climber.
What he really prides himself upon is basically being a good climber, above anything else, you know, above strength, above training, above putting in the long hours and working really hard, which he clearly does as well. For him, it's about just hours on rock in as many diverse styles as possible. And we chatted about this with other people. We chatted about this when we were talking about other climbers out there. And he was like, one of the major kind of flaws he sees in so many other really good climbers is they just don't get enough time on rock, and they don't try enough different things, and they kind of close themselves off into one particular style, which is also totally fine if you really want to excel in one particular thing. But what he wants to be is the best climber he can be, which he is, and that makes him the best climber in the world because he can do everything.
Yeah, it's incredibly diverse. It's really, really impressive.
I thought what would happen on that day was that he would come along, he'd potentially try and flash it because he's flashed 9A plus and plenty of 9As, like he's clearly physically capable. And then if he didn't flash it, he would do it in a day. And that's what I genuinely expected. And I thought if Adam does it in a day, like it can still be really hard because he's able to climb really hard routes in a day. And maybe he does find it a little bit easier. And if it is that, then he's the best person to tell me because he's the one person who I think I can really genuinely believe because of this vast experience that he has. He's not necessarily specific in one particular style. He does clearly have his own strengths, but he's able to really do everything. And what I discovered was someone who is not a god. He's not operating on a physical or technical level far superior to us, to all the other professional climbers that I know. Don't get me wrong, he's flipping amazing, super strong, very, very, very good. But I was expecting to see somebody that was just so far away from anything else I knew as a climber that it would be almost kind of incomprehensible to me. And Adam, like he falls off, he makes mistakes, he has to try really, really damn hard. He's far from, being this perfect kind of mythical creature that we often believe him to be. But what was absolutely mind-blowing to me is to see how once he's got something sorted out, he's able to then go and make an actual attempt. The game is on, and when the game is on with Adam, it is 110% on the rock. Literally everything that he has as a climber goes into his red point or his on site or his flash, everything that he's got, and he's able to transfer all of that strength, all of that technique, all of those years of experience into one moment climbing. And that is flipping amazing to see. Because I think most of the other really professional climbers that are out there, at least the ones that I know and myself included, I think we struggle to get past, like 50, 60% of our actual physical capabilities. There's so many other things that can go wrong, so many little ways you can kind of blunder and slip up, and he just, when he needs to make it happen, he makes it happen, and that was amazing to watch. It was like climbing with Yuji Hirayama, who climbs in a very, very similar way. He's able to absolutely max out his physical capabilities, but with a physical and technical ability even higher than that. Really amazing to see. I realized at the end of the day that Adam is human. And that to me makes everything that he's ever done even more impressive.
Yeah, I 100% agree on this. I'm going to come back to this because me and Pete had a very, very similar experience with climbing with him when he came over to the UK and making the almost identical conclusion. And I remember
I'm excited to hear about it.
banging on about it to people afterwards, going, I couldn't believe it. My mind was so blown by this like key thing. But just to kind of one thing I wanted to just like get a sense of for before he came over and tried the route with you was how much was he wanting to almost prepare himself either mentally, tactically, physically on the route beforehand? Because you obviously have loads of knowledge about the route. How much was he building into that before he came to kind of turn up and go, I know what I'm about to face? And two, was there much around evolving beta or experiences that others had tried? Because I know like Malero had come and tried the route with you, Seb had tried the route, a number of those. Was there much conversation around that before he came?
There was definitely some conversation before the actual trip. You know, he'd asked me for a start when the best time of year to come would be. Obviously, he asked me all about the gear. I sent him some, I think some photos, maybe some video about moves and things like that. And he'd also been talking to other people that had tried the route to get their opinions and feelings on it. I know he'd spoken quite a lot to Jacopo. I don't know if he spoke to Malero and to Seb, but he definitely took a little bit of information, but I don't think I'd ever say it was, you know, a huge objective for him. I think he definitely saw it as a fun experience on the side of his other climbing, his other training. Obviously right now he's full in Olympic preparation mode. So just taking the week off to come and try it away from his training schedule was already like a big honor for me to know that it was important enough for that. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think he was obsessed with getting every single micro beta to come and maybe try and flash it. I guess flashing was probably on his mind because I think it always is with Adam. But then at the same time, when he actually came to try it, he'd had a small bicep injury that had been kind of niggling him for a couple of weeks. So he hadn't really been training as much as he'd hoped. And he wasn't really sure what his physical shape was going to be in. And also with the end of the route potentially being maybe a little bit dangerous, he decided that he wanted just to go on the route with me, get as much beta as he could, and then try and do it as quick as he could. Mm. So the plan was that we'd go on the route together. We'd spend a couple of hours basically checking out all the moves. I gave him all my beta. I also gave him all of the other beta that I know from Malero and from Jacopo. So he had a few different things to work through. He also, which I think is really, really important, he had the beta of what not to do from everyone else that's been trying it. Like, for example, Jacopo, he really struggled on the route with his skin because he got a really bad split from one of the holes that then just kept opening and opening and opening. He'd have a couple of rest days, the split would open again, and that kind of ruined his first trip to come and try it. So we went on it in the morning. We started out on the easy moves at the end of the route, and obviously he did it really, really quick. But I've seen good climbers fall off those moves. They're not super easy. They're just a bit weird. He just, you know, like a walk in the park. So that's when I was like, okay, he's just gonna walk up this thing. And then as we moved backwards through the hard sections of the route, we got towards the crux, which is really very specific. This is the kind of pinky mono move where you can use one of your other fingers, but it makes it quite a lot harder and a bit more painful. He didn't like the pinky mono. I think his fingers are a bit fatter than mine, so he doesn't fit quite as well. But he was totally open. Again, you know, I almost imagine that, you know, being Adam, it must be so much pressure for him to always be the best, always be the superstar. And I could kind of see how, you know, if you struggle on something, it might be hard for him to deal with or accept. But he's just so open about his weaknesses, the things that he doesn't like. And he tried the pinky and he's like, there's no way I'm doing that without, you know, some specific training and a lot of recruitment. So I'm going to try and find another way. And instead of getting stuck on it, like some of the other climbers that have come to try, you know, not really find a way through, he was able just to kind of wipe the slate clean, look at it from a different perspective and find something that worked for him. So turn a move that doesn't really suit his style or his strengths into a move that does. And he did it this insane way with a tiny crimped mono twisted finger that just looks the most disgustingly painful. You'd probably love it. Disgustingly painful thing I've ever seen. And he's like, yeah, I grew up climbing on holds like this, so it feels really normal. And then we went on to the first hard boulder problem that he managed to do, but he was kind of grunting a little bit, struggling, finding it hard. And then as soon as he had that set of moves wired, I told him about Jacopo's finger. He's like, I've done the move. I know how to do it. Nothing's going to change if I try it again, so I'm not going to waste that skin. He's like, right, I'm going to get on lead now. So this was about 2 hours after getting there. And so he went on lead starting from the final protection, which is something that I'd done quite a lot, and I talked to him about that tactic. And he agreed with me that it's a really useful tactic to do, to not only learn the physical element of a route, but also to kind of get really into the emotional aspect of it that's so important when you're trad climbing. So straight away he went on lead. He really hoped to do a big link, basically link the entire hard section. And then he fell off. And I was like, I'd be laying him on the floor, kind of not really knowing what to say. Like, should I tell him it's okay, like next time you'll do it, or kind of make a joke about it? Because again, it's Adam Ondra, like he doesn't fall. We don't see him fall. But he fell. And then he pulled on back on after a long rest, tried a shorter link, did a really, really good link, but fell again before the end, took a giant swing. And that was my first time actually belaying anybody in that route, and certainly taking the massive lob. So it was pretty exciting. And again, I don't really know what to say, but it's Adam, and he's like the best climber in the world, and probably one of the hardest working climbers out there. So he just grabs the rope, he pulls back up, he gets back on again, he does some more moves, and he's like, okay, down. He got everything he needed to know. He didn't succeed in the way that I guess he was expecting, and definitely I was expecting him to do. But he'd understood everything that he needed to, and he knew that there was no point wasting any more time. The next job was down to the floor, basically go flash on Le Voyage up until where it splits into Bon Voyage, which he did. I was shouting up beta to him. He did some moves wrong, but he just kind of cruised through. But it's like 8A plus or something, so of course he did. And I was just really blown away by how he knew he didn't have much time at Anot. The weather forecast was pretty bad, and he was just like, I've got a job to do. This is what I need to do it, so let's do it. And from probably 10 o'clock in the morning when we arrived, when we no 11 o'clock when we arrived at the crag, until 6:30 or 7 when it went dark, he didn't stop climbing.
Really?
He
So he
did
was just active
on the
on
route,
top.
just working things, taking a lob, pulling back up the rope, trying another sequence, taking another fall, going back somewhere else, coming down to the floor, having a quick snack, getting back on the route again, going and working some other stuff. Like, absolute professional, incredible work capacity that, I clearly don't have, and I don't know many people that have that work capacity. And by the end of the day, he was clearly exhausted from all this time in the route, but he was still up there trying to work stuff because he felt like there was still things to learn, and maybe even the best way to maximize his efficiency was to climb those moves when he was tired and exhausted, to really understand what he needed to do and what he didn't need to do. And in fact, I think that word's the most important thing, that efficiency. That kind of really sums everything about his climbing style. And we've all seen him climbing super fast, in these videos of him. It's especially impressive when he's doing his on-sites, these incredibly hard on-sites, and he's just bam, 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 no stopping, taking super high risks. And he explained to me that that's his style. That's how he knows he can climb the best he can do. But if he wants to be able to climb as well as he can in that style, he needs to climb in that style all the time. So quick, not waiting around, not really thinking too much about. That's not true. He's thinking a lot, but whilst he's climbing, basically just super fast, super high risk climbing all the time, from warm up to warm down, all day, every day. And that's why he's able to do these amazing things.
One of the things I just picked up on there that I think people listening might find it hard to kind of grasp and get their heads around is that you say that he climbs really fast and he climbs in a high risk way. But I think a lot of people listening will think, well, how does he climb in a high risk way all the time and not suffer the repercussions of being in a high risk environment all the time? Because it's just, well, it's a lot to do that all the time. So what do you see as being the way that he manages that from your perspective? I mean, you're you're a professional track climber. You know risk well. So what?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. Risk. Yeah. I think we're misunderstanding each other. When I say high risk, I mean like high risk of falling off moves, even when he's sport climbing. So no, not risk in a dangerous sense. But like throwing for holds really quickly without, staticking into them and feeling them, just kind of reading the rock, having a gut feeling and going for a move. And so, yeah, maybe just wanted to clarify that point. Nothing really to do with danger. I think
Okay,
when
yeah.
he actually, when there is danger involved, then he'll rein everything back in and climb in a much more static way. And that's probably one of the reasons why he doesn't do that much of it. I listened to another podcast with him recently. He was talking about his kind of take on free soloing and danger. And the kind of takeaway was that he doesn't free solo because when you're free soloing, every single move is a moment where you can fall to the ground and die. And when he's doing these dangerous routes on the Czech sandstone, most of the time you're actually in a relatively safe place and you only have to commit to that dangerous moment for, maybe 5% of the actual route. And that, he said, is something that he can justify to himself, but not really any more than that. So the kind of traditional, typical style of trad that you might find in the Peak District, which is super high consequence but l relatively low difficulty, doesn't really interest him that much. But the really hard physical end of trad climbing with some big runouts that's ultimately safe, he really enjoys it. And so to go back to this high risk style that he has, I think you were saying that it would be a hard thing to do mentally, and I really agree with that. But I think just simply by practicing that style all the time, it becomes second nature to him to climb like that. And the high risk, it's ultimately about just for him trying to be as efficient as he can, because I think he knows his body better than anybody else. And despite us all thinking that he has endless endurance, he considers himself not actually to be a very fit climber, which is kind of funny. He just knows how to maximize whatever capability he has. And yeah, that was pretty cool. Like, just to give an example of how kind of close he makes sure that he takes every single move. Low down in Le Voyage, there's a rest just after the very first boulder problem. So you've probably climbed like, I don't know, maybe like a 7C or something to get to this point. And then there's a no hands knee bar where you can have a little bit of a shake before you do the first real crux of Le Voyage. And he was in that knee bar just checking out whether, right knee was better, left knee was better, whether he could go upside down to really relax in it. And he fell from the no hands knee bar. I just slipped out of a no hands knee bar in like a 7C. And I was just like, wow. On one hand, you could ask the question, why did Adam Ondra just fall out of a no hands knee bar on a 7C? And the answer is because Adam Ondra wants to know exactly how much energy he needs to put into that knee bar to stay on the wall. And if he doesn't take it right to the edge, which means sometimes he falls off, then he's always going to be wasting energy. And it was just little realizations like that through the entire day. Again, just to go back to what I said before, that just made me absolutely in awe of how good of a climber he is.
Yeah,
And yeah, amazing, really amazing.
it's so cool that efficiency factor and like not overusing energy and not yeah and just sort of getting the absolute most out of what you're capable of. Because I always have something that's stuck in my mind from years and years ago when I don't think it's the first time that I met Johnny Dawes, but certainly an early time when we were just talking about climbing and things like that. And I remember the thing that stuck in my head was this concept that he talks about around how he wanted it to be like he was almost falling off holds, that it was just like so close to the failure point, and that was like the sweet spot. And that meant you were climbing really well because you were actually nearly falling off. And I've often tried to remember that over the years, that like if I feel too strong on a hold in a way, I'm probably using too
Wasting
much. You
energy.
almost have to, you almost want to feel weak on every hold. It's a really weird, like, paradox.
Paradox completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we teach people we try to teach people that idea in our coaching sessions, Cara and I, about like you hang on a jug, you take your feet off, you feel what it feels like to be using 100% of your energy. You know, every muscle is tight, and then slowly you start to try and release these different muscles, put your feet back on, find the best technical position to take weight off your arms, really relax everything in your arms, in your shoulders, in your neck. You know, everything's feeling floppy and droopy, only using the muscles that you need. And you'll get to a point where your hands kind of start to slide, and actually the integrity of your skin comes into play, and that catches on the edge of holds, and that can kind of cheat and hold you on a little bit more. And at some point you're going to get to a point where basically you'll slip off. And then we try to get them to then go back on, to come back towards that position and maybe add a few percent, so that they're not scared that they're actually going to fall any second. Because when you're scared like that, actually that can often lead to overgripping. But find that really delicate balance between I'm as efficient as I can be, but I'm not, you know, worried that any second I'm going to pop off. And it's easy to talk about, easy to practice in a climbing gym, but so hard to put that into play on the rock, move after move, route after route. And yeah, that's, I think, you know, why people like Adam is so good.
Yeah. One of the things that we alluded to a little bit earlier, and you kind of actually started to go into, which I also said that I kind of had the same experience with Pete when me and him had climbed down the cellar with Adam, was this aspect of Adam's ability to be able to put together everything that he's picked up on a sort of a working session, a working go on something. And then when he just switches into, let's just call it Andra mode.
Yeah.
It really stands out as being something like that you've basically never seen in another climber to that extent before. It's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Although I didn't actually get to see the actual ascent. No, because I was only there for the first day, and then we had to leave because we were going to Switzerland for our little bouldering trip. And then the weather turned pretty bad, so we went away for a couple of days and then came back. But even during those couple of days away, he was totally in Andra mode. He was, you know, telling me that he didn't really feel fit. He didn't quite know what his form was like on Bon Voyage. And then he left the first day. It was raining so much. They went to Diverse in the Gorge du Loup, this big overhanging limestone cave. And he sent me a picture. I asked him, how's it going? He sent me a picture. And there's normally not a waterfall, but it was raining so much that the water was just coming over the top of the crag. And you could see the mist all around. It just looked like disgusting climbing conditions. And he was there to do his thing, and he did an 8C plus 9A, first or second try or something. And then the day after, he went to Bukes, and he on-sighted an 8B plus and an 8C. These are his two rest days from his main project. And then he came back to Bon Voyage. He had his first go of tries. I think he actually struggled a little bit. He told me that he was really surprised to find it difficult to concentrate on the climbing like he's used to being able to do, even in Le Voyage. And so even if Le Voyage should be so easy for him, shouldn't really have that much of an effect, he was actually getting into Bon Voyage feeling kind of pumped because he just felt a little bit detached from his usual climbing style because of the trad element. And it's kind of funny because he'd been so much at ease in those moves, working the route on lead. He'd never been in Le Voyage on top rope. He'd just gone straight up it, big run outs and all. And then when it actually came down to it, he couldn't quite make it work. And he was like, it was such a new experience for me. I really enjoyed it. I thought that was great to be so open about, you know, something that you might have struggled with. But I think going back to what you were just saying is that he took all that experience and all that learning on that second day on the route. So he tried, he made two red points on the second day, and he fell twice after the crux in the end of the hard climbing in a pumpy move. And he took all of that learning. He kind of streamlined the whole process, placed a little bit less gear, even less gear than me, which made it a little bit scary. But you know, he was confident in him, in himself and in that approach, and then came back a day later. And the next time he went on the route, he sent me a message saying, "Wow, that was amazing. I think I've understood it. I think I've basically understood trad climbing, and now it's okay." And then he'd fallen on the very last arête with like a foot slip, just a kind of a mistake from maybe going too quick or something. And then he told me, "I'm going to try and make one more attempt, I think, but I'm pretty exhausted, so I've not got much hope." And yeah, he sent me the video. I've got the video of his actual send, and that's when you see like full on Ondra mode come out, and he's screaming and he's puffing and he's like, "Wow, that is a good fight." And when he did it, he called me straight away, and he was so happy. And he told me, like, what was amazing about it is I climbed super well on the bottom of the route. I climbed like I felt like I needed to climb, like I wanted to climb to be kind of proud of that. And still, I had to really, really, really dig deep on the top, and that made it such a memorable experience. And that's really similar to what I felt when I was doing the route. I remember falling on my crux a lot of times, and when I'd been working it, that section in isolation, when I'd been working the entire top section in isolation, basically making lead attempts starting from the last gear, every time I got through that crux move, I'd often fall on the crux. Every time I got through it, I'd climb to the end. Even if it felt tough, I kind of always had enough in the tank. And I was really worried at first that the actual route would basically turn out to be a bit of a one move wonder. And as soon as I found a way to get through this crux move from the floor, I'd just go to the top. But what I actually found is it's super pumpy on that last like six or seven moves when you're tired from the floor, and I really had to dig deep. And I remember getting to the top and not even really knowing if I'd just done it or not, because I'd been so close to falling. So it was really amazing to hear that Adam had a very similar experience, and that, you know, he could take away something maybe as special as I'd found on that route. That was nice.
Yeah, it's so nice to see that. And you know, your massive mission journey that you had on that route, and then someone who's just so capable come along and get really pushed on it and have an absolutely amazing experience on it as well. I think that's one of the things, you know, in any niche within any sport where there's just a very small crowd of you that are all doing this thing, like, you know, for example, a really hard route. So it's a very small club. So getting to have someone that comes in and shares that club with you is a really special experience. And I quite often chat about this actually with people when I'm just like chatting the crack and stuff like that. And they ask about whether, you know, being a professional climber is a lonely thing and is it a good fun, you know, as a career and what you're doing with that. And one of the things that I do say to people often is that it's odd in the way that you have this really particular experience with your own climbing when you do it all the time, and you're often trying to get into this very sort of marginal limit of what you can do, and you just want other people to share that with you. You
It's
just,
almost like you kind of speak a slightly different language, and a lot of the time you feel like people don't really understand you, and when somebody does, it's just like this great kind of affinity between you. Like, "Oh wow, you get me, I get you. That's so cool. Let's have a big hug."
No, it's really great. And another question I had with Adam, sort of compared to you, with, you know, both having done this route, is you've done a lot of bold climbing over the years. You've done a lot of sport climbing as well, and we know Adam has as well. And you do have, I think, you do have an approach, different approach to risk and things like that. But what did you think were your takeaways and the similarities and differences in terms of sort of risk and run out gear falling stuff? Because you didn't go on it and go, well, I'll just treat it like really, really distant bolts and I'll just work it, you know, from the ground. So how do you see that a difference in your approaches or similarities?
I think that the two of us are both like pretty methodical. with our approach to climbing. Like we analyze a lot of different things and try not to let emotions get too involved in our decisions when they relate to risk. And sorry, excuse me. For some reason, I guess it's probably just because it's the style of climbing that I've done the most. I'm pretty capable at dealing with my emotions when it comes to risk taking. I'm not very good at dealing with my emotions when it comes to pure performance. But with Adam, it was cool to see because he could look at these sections that, objectively speaking, there is a fairly big run out. And there is a possibility that obviously with a fairly big run out, you could hurt yourself, or the possibility of hurting yourself is higher than with a smaller run out. But he's able to look at it really as objectively as possible and say, well, the difficulty is X, the fall looks like Y, and I believe that my chance of not hurting myself is enough that completely justifies me going for it. And that's the way I generally try to look at things and really separate the idea of danger and fear. And that's something that I think gets muddled a lot of the time, especially with people maybe that don't have that much experience climbing on trad routes or climbing outside or even climbing on lead in the gym. This fear that you might have about something often takes control even when you're in a very safe situation. And the opposite can also be true. Sometimes people can be totally at ease in a situation that is actually objectively super dangerous. And we talked about that quite a lot. So he told me that, he doesn't mind taking really, really big runouts on sport routes, skipping bolts when he's really far up in the air, because for him, there's very, very little that could go wrong. But he said he sees plenty of other people skipping bolts like he would do, but maybe really close to the ground. And he's like, a lot of these climbers, to him, they seem like they're taking completely unnecessary risks, or they're completely unaware of the risks that they're taking. Maybe they've never had the situation arise where they fall off a low to the ground move where they've skipped a bolt and they scrape the floor, or they hit the floor and they hurt themselves and they don't realize that it could actually happen. And that was super interesting to see that, Adam's not a trad climber. He doesn't have to do this on a daily basis, but it's still something that really enters into his mind. He can do things that a lot of people would maybe consider scary, but they're not reckless for him because they're not dangerous, because he's made that distinction between the two things. And I guess it reinforces the way that I already do things. I say that maybe in a strange way, and I know he says he doesn't like doing bold things, but I think he's also maybe a little bit bolder than I am in certain things. Like he has a lot of confidence on. I try to really have a lot of confidence in my gear, for example. When you tie on, you fall onto a rope, the rope's not going to break, so it's. I don't even think about it. Whereas a lot of people, they're worried, have I done my knot right? Is this thing going to hold me? I know that a friend is really, really strong, way stronger than it needs to be. So generally speaking, I don't worry about them breaking. But if I'm super run out above a single piece, then I start to think, oh, what if, what if there is a defect in that piece? What if the beaner that I've clipped on it, the single quick draw, somehow gets unclipped? Like I really prefer climbing above two friends if I'm going to make a good run out, or two pieces of gear. And Adam is actually able to just be like, well, one is good enough. It's never going to come out. I'll just place one. And so in places in Bon Voyage where I placed two cams, because it wasn't that much more effort to place it, and I felt like the amount that I could gain by being more relaxed in the hard climbing afterwards completely offset the energy that I lost in placing the piece. He placed one piece because he was like, well, I don't need to, it's fine. And I was like, well, if that works for you, that's great. It's probably not gonna never gonna break, never gonna pop out. But it's just about finding what works what works for you. It's that balance between taking risks, because often in trad climbing, risky climbing is less physical and less tiring, but also being comfortable enough with the risk so that your mind doesn't waste all of the physiological advantages that you've just made for yourself.
Yeah. I suppose it often comes down to the amount of time that you spend in a certain zone and how much you're doing things. Like, I must have taken, like, in my life, like, literally thousands of trad falls on different things. Like, and lots of people maybe have taken 10 or less trad falls in their life. And Adam, objectively, probably has also taken a relatively small number of trad climbing falls compared to us. So if you weigh up the numbers of those weird freak things happening, then it is still on his side. But
it's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, so I think it is a different equation. And I've broken gear when I've been out trad climbing. And yes, it's extremely rare, but the sheer number of times I've fallen off now over like 25 years of climbing, I have broken stuff.
And I've also,
and I've unclipped ropes on beaners when it's gone like over.
Weird stuff happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, like hits a little weird corner or a nubbin and opens the gate. And it has happened. Yeah. So I don't know. I just do this weighing up of risk and go, well, I spend a lot of time in this zone, so I'm going to have backups.
Belt and braces kind of thing. Yeah, I much prefer having a couple of pieces and doing a big run out than having like one piece, doing a small run out, another piece, doing another small run out. So I'll often climb like that, kind of build a nest of gear that I'm 100% happy with and then go for it. And if I'm 100% happy with the gear and I know the fallout zone is good, it doesn't matter if I'm climbing, you know, 3 meters above my last piece or 10 meters. It's like, it's just slightly longer in the air when you fall off, but the end result is the same.
Yeah.
Probably sounds really crazy to a lot of people out there, but it just, it's just what you get used to, and the ways that you learn to try and make the most out of this crazy thing that we call climbing.
How did you feel about Adam's sort of takeaway on the grade? And you know, you had obviously been very interested in getting his opinion on it, and it was made even more valid by the fact that he actually did make a repeat of the route. So where have you sort of ended up with that?
It was a complete dream come true. I can't imagine a better way to end this kind of whole story. You know, even if someone else had repeated it and agreed with the grade, that would have also have been great. But the other really, really good trad climbers out there, they're you know, similar to me in that we've got experience, but we don't have an absolute ton of experience around that level. And we all have specific strengths that mean that, you know, we can probably climb around 9A when it suits us. But if a route doesn't suit us, maybe my top grade drops to 8C plus or even 8C. And so really to have Adam there with just this insane amount of experience that he has all over the place, all different styles of climbing, it was, just like the very, very best, kind of almost like a stamp of approval that you could get. But what really, I think, touched me most about it all, I guess I got a little bit carried away with the grade of it, because it's what, first of all, what everybody wants to hear about and everyone wants to talk about. And because of my whole history with the Walk of Life and with E12, it became pretty important again to me. But I always said that the most important thing for me in my climbing is doing amazing lines and amazing routes. And that's what I'm really searching for. And so to have him come and say, yes, it is really, really hard, but what was special was the route, and that it's this miracle of Mother Nature. It kind of was like this, you know, this light bulb moment of, oh, yeah, it actually is a damn amazing route. That's why I started climbing it in the first place, not for this 9A trad grade or not for E12, because it's just so good, so amazing. And you know, I don't know if I'll ever find another route like that. It took me so long to find that one. And I've talked with Jacopo a lot about this, and he feels the same thing about Tribe. You know, it's like, on one hand, it's kind of sad when you think maybe this is it. Maybe this is the best I'll ever find. But I mean, it's been such a crazy ride to get here, to put myself in a position to be able to do this route in the first place, to get it done, and then to have it repeated by Adam. That, wow, if this is the only thing that I really, do over the next, well, the rest of my life, I think I'm also pretty happy with that. If this was, legacy is maybe a big word, but if this is what I had to have to leave behind for the climbing world, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, that's so nice to hear.
Not to say I'm done. I was at Annot today, and I've actually just figured out that my new project there is possible. So I've done all the moves. It's got gear, not very good gear, but it's got some. It's got enough. And so now the process begins of,
Back on it
slowly
again.
getting back on that horse. This is
Yeah.
going to be a tough one because it's a lot bolder than Bon Voyage. So yeah, I need to be Bon Voyage are treated like a sport route. I got on the lead knowing that I was going to take a lot of falls, and one day hopefully I'd get to the end. Whereas this new one is a similar difficulty to Bon Voyage, but I really would prefer not to fall off. So I have no idea how long it's going to take for me to feel comfortable climbing at that level above that amount of danger. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting process, but I'm so psyched.
Oh, cool. We'll watch this space. And
Yeah,
what's
might want to watch it for a few
yeah. What do you feel like you're going to walk away from this bit of climbing with Adam and take into this year? Is there anything in particular that you're kind of going, oh, I'm going to keep thinking about that. I'm going to keep remembering that, or I really walked away with this thing?
years. I'm gonna try and do more climbing just for me. So I think one of the I've always been the type of climber to, I grew up on the gritstone basically as a head pointer. So I think my preferred style has always been to go and work on really, really hard things and do them when I feel comfortable and when I'm well practiced on them. And I think the more I've done that, I think, yeah, the older I've got, the less good of a climber I've become. I think I was a much better climber when I was younger and a lot weaker and a lot smaller than I am now. I think now I rely a lot more on my power and my fitness, thanks to working with you guys, especially Ollie, that I've finally managed to get a little bit of. And it's been a wild thing, kind of, where I feel a little bit, I don't know, self-conscious that I'm not the technical climber that I once was. And after climbing and spending some time with Adam and hearing his take on that and how important it is to him, and then watching him and realizing just how important efficiency is, I think I'd like to try and just do a lot more climbing, a lot more easy grades, and spend a lot more time on rock just to try and build some of that base up again, which is, easier said than done. As parents now, we have less time than we had before, and so this kind of intense project mindset works pretty well at the crag for us. So I'm not sure how practical it's going to be, but that would be that in a perfect world, that's what I'd like to do. Whether it'll happen or not, I don't know. But one thing's for sure, I'm just going to keep on trucking, keep on trying to do some fun routes, try and do some hard boulder problems. I'm really psyched on that at the minute, especially this boulder in Switzerland that I was trying last week. And then go back to Anot and get stuck into this trad project, and that's it.
Oh, amazing.
Rinse,
You know
repeat.
that actually leaves me remembering, and it was a little kind of like fact that I used to pull out quite a bit in sort of a few years back when I was looking at a lot of the data at Lattice and the kind of assessments we used to do and everything like that.
Yeah.
And there was this pattern I noticed that we used to have a, and I'm sure people listening will find this kind of I'm guessing this is going to resonate basically with a load of people who have quite hard jobs and do a lot of work, was that if we looked at a lot of the assessment scores that came in, and you got this kind of cohort of climbers that were just always excessively strong or fit for the grade, and you'd like look at their physical metric scores, assessments, and go, you should be climbing like three, four, if sometimes even grades harder than you are right now. And if you asked them and found out how many days they were climbing outside and just going climbing, and nearly always they fitted into this category of 50 days or less a year outside. And you go, 50, that's really quite small. That's a small number. And then you go, well, actually, no, that's every single weekend and getting one day out. But then you go, well, what about the British climber who might have quite a few weekends where the weather's not even good
But the
enough
spouse,
to
exactly.
go outside? And then suddenly you can do the numbers and realize it's not that hard if you don't make an effort to suddenly get into around that 50 days a year outside or less. And it's a, I think it's a really big effect on climbing and why people just will not be as efficient, not move as well, not climb as well, and end up not getting as much out of their climbing.
I always knew that it was a factor, and I can see that just between Caroline and myself. Our max boulder grades are really, quite far apart, but our max sport climbing grades are not so different. Like, she's just so much more efficient than I am on the rock. And so I kind of always knew it was a problem, but because it's Caroline doing it, sometimes I just, I write off things that I should really learn from Caro is just, well, spend some time doing something else. But seeing just how important it was to Adam to be that kind of perfect version of himself on the rock made me realize that I could invest more time in myself and, probably see some benefits from that approach.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, thanks so much for
Oh, no worries. My pleasure.
getting on another little Zoom call with me and
Thanks
doing
for your interesting questions.
it. It's always good to talk about Adam and talk about climbing and what we
The
could expect.
Alamondra Appreciation Society. We should start a little club.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, mate. Thanks for the chat, and yeah, see you at some point.